From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on March 6th when 1,000 college students from around the country landed in Miami for an event sponsored by the Clinton Global Initiative. CGI, as it's called, hosts an annual CGI University aimed at inspiring students to serve their communities. And when we look at how public service has dropped in recent years, many educators call this a valuable goal. Well, now the Clinton Global Initiative has been in the news recently for some other reasons. It's no secret that Hillary Clinton is preparing a presidential run. The CGI raises a lot of money from donors around the world, and reporters have been asking for full disclosure. Critics worry that the CGI is bringing in money from overseas sources thanks to Hillary Clinton's connections as Secretary of State. And the concern is that she'll have favors to hand out if she's elected president. The New York Times is in an editorial wrote, quote, Hillary should ban foreign donors to CGI. Well, this hour, let's find out more about what CGI is, especially CGIU, what they're asking students to do. Nazareth College was selected to send a student delegation. We're going to meet many of them this hour. Let me introduce our guests. Adam Lewandowski is Nazareth College's Associate Director for the Center for Civic Engagement and CGI University's liaison at NAS. Adam, thanks for being here.
Yeah, very happy to be here this afternoon.
And a packed studio, so we're going to play some musical chairs, but it starts with the students who are on the mics now. Daniel Mensing is here. Daniel, nice to see you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Haley Johnson's here. Haley, nice to meet you.
Hi, happy to be here.
And Ceylon Kim is here as well. Ceylon, thanks for being here.
Hi, nice to meet you.
All right, Adam, first of all, back it up here and tell us, when did NAS start sending students to CGIU? How did this start?
Sure. We started 3 years ago. Nazareth College was invited by the Golisano Foundation to send a delegate down there to check out CGIU, see what the activities were, what was happening. As a result of that, we decided to become part of the university network for CGIU, which meant that we were stepping up our commitment to really working with our students and empowering them to apply. And so last year was the first year that we sent an official group of students. We had 11 students with 6 projects, and this is our second year of really this full participation.
All right, so let's listen to Bill Clinton. We've got some cuts lined up this hour from Bill Clinton, from Hillary Clinton. Very interesting group of speakers there. They had many big names, a lot of celebrities there. This is Bill talking to Larry Wilmore, who now hosts what used to be Stephen Colbert's old digs at Comedy Central. It's The Nightly Show. He follows The Daily Show. Larry Wilmore talking to Bill Clinton about the recent news. Let's get this out of the way. Larry Wilmore said same thing. Let's get this out of the way, Bill. You've heard about people saying you're taking in money for CGI from Saudi Arabia and other sources, and we've got to be comfortable with that. How do you answer to that? Here's Bill Clinton answering that question.
We do get money from other countries, and some of them are in the Middle East. And the money that we raised in the last couple of years for an endowment, so this, all these programs will run forever, even when I get to the point when I can't raise the money every year, are from people that have helped us before. And I think it's a good thing. For example, the UAE gave us money. Do we agree with everything they do? No, but they're helping us fight ISIS. Mm-hmm. And they built a great university with NYU, open to people around the world, and they've helped to support the work that this foundation does. Same thing is true that we just had this, Hillary and Chelsea were just up here talking about women and girls. Do I agree with all the foreign policy of Saudi Arabia? No. But I think it's pretty impressive that the recent king who just died built the first coeducational institution in Saudi Arabia, and that they have more women than men in colleges. So what you find is you got to decide when you do this work whether it'll do more good than harm if someone helps you from another country.
All right, Adam, good enough for you?
Well, what can I say about it? I'll talk about my experience and how it translates at CGIU.
Sure.
You know, I think funding from CGI supports CGIU, and the goal of CGIU is to really empower students, identify the next generation of social innovators, and provide them with knowledge and skills and connections to do those projects. Right. And so our goal and our connection with CGIU is to really assist our students in connecting with these 5 pillars of CGIU. And so the outcomes are really to focus on global challenges in education, right? Environment and climate change, peace and human rights, poverty alleviation, and public health. And these are truly global challenges that we face, and it takes a global response.
Best I can tell, Bill and Hillary Clinton were saying the ends justify the means, but the means aren't as nefarious as we may think, and they're not there handing out favors if Hillary Clinton becomes president. So, I mean, but I, you know, look, I admired the fact that Bill was willing to address that on stage, get that out of the way. So now we've gotten that out of the way. And let's go around the room and ask. I'll start with you, Danielle. You've met Bill Clinton. I've seen you in pictures with him a couple different years now. Mm-hmm. You guys are like good friends now.
Well, it's a great experience to go to CGIU. You know, we have the Day of Action, and that's when President Clinton and Chelsea Clinton go about the area where we're painting or gardening and doing help for others. And I got a chance to talk with him last year, 2014. It was held at Arizona State University. And this year it was in Miami. And I was just sitting there, and I saw him coming, and I asked, President Clinton, would you like to paint? And he sat down and started painting, and then he was holding on to those collard greens really, really tightly, and he started talking about him growing up on the farm, and he would grow two-pound tomatoes, and it was just a really interesting, cool conversation.
I'm not surprised he did. The first time I met Bill Clinton, he was actually at RIT, and as Adam mentioned, certainly he's had a relationship with Tom Golisano and the foundation for a number of years now. And so whenever there is a big political leader, but always presidents, they've got handlers everywhere. And you know, they had the media, this has got to be almost 10 years now, fenced off. Bill Clinton comes out of a building at RIT and he's going straight for the bus. And the media, and we're being instructed, no questions. He's going straight to the bus. Somebody in the media gaggle says, President Clinton, and he looks over and says, hey, guys, and he comes over to the fence, and you could see that his PR team was thinking, come on. But so I'm not surprised, Danielle. It's a photo op, but at the same time, I think he is a people person. I really think that he genuinely likes talking to people.
Oh, he really does. I mean, he's very personable. He's down to earth. He likes to take selfies, and he likes to talk to us.
And he's probably familiar with the term.
Oh, yes.
Selfie. So we're going to talk in a minute about what their individual projects are, but let me ask, Salon, did you get a chance to meet the former president?
Not the president, but I drew a mural with Chelsea Clinton.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she drew a butterfly, and I colored her butterfly. It was so interesting to see them because I'm from South Korea, and they are so famous in my country too. So to listening to their speech and their speaking, it was so inspirational and very powerful experience for me. So yeah, I cannot forget this experience.
Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about Bill's personable sort of nature. How was Chelsea?
Oh, she was so energetic, and she was so kind to students. And she was encouraging us to contribute to global issues. So it was really impressive to see her.
All right, Haley. Same question for you. Who did you get a chance to meet anybody?
Sure. I was actually privy to the same conversation that Danielle was talking mm-hmm. about. I was there with all of these really infectious children, and we were painting and gardening together, and he came over to talk to us. So that in itself just showed what a personable person he is. And, you know, we're not spokespeople for the Clintons necessarily, but it was great that they were so focused on, like Adam said, our social innovation, our ways of approaching global challenges in new ways.
When you see a former president walking over and you think, well, if I get one question, what do I want to talk to him about? Do you let him start the conversation? What do you want to talk to him about?
We definitely let him start the conversation, but I think, you know, the majority of us are go-getters who were CGIU attendees. So something I was really interested in talking to not just President Clinton about, but also the panelists, was the concept of intersectionality and talking about the ways different oppressions intersect. So, like, you can't talk about gender without talking about race. My project, which I'll get to in a little while, is about body image. So you couldn't talk about body image without talking about gender. So it was really interesting that all of the panelists, the president, former president included, were just really concerned about what we were studying.
Interesting. And so again, if you're just joining us, about 1,000, is that about right, Anne? About 1,000 students at CGIU, is that right?
That's correct. A little over 1,000 students.
All right. And so what you have are a remarkable mix of ideas and projects around the country. And to that exact subject, former President Clinton spoke about why he likes doing this. I want to listen to what he had to say about this, because he makes the point that when you are in the Oval Office, you sort of have to keep your mind on the big things. And this lets you look at it at a different level. Let's listen to Bill Clinton.
And when I left office, I was out of government, and I wanted to get out of it without giving up the ability to have an impact on the things I had always cared about. I love this because, if, for example, as compared with being president, you have less power, but you can have more impact on discrete things, and you can get down to the grassroots in a way that's very difficult to do.
I think that's exactly what Haley is talking about, is your project and your focus area, public health, but specifically girls and women, body image.
Correct.
Bill Clinton and the Clinton family is probably not spending a lot of time in that when they're in the Oval Office for good reason, but he can meet students around the country and send you out with ideas. So I do find that very interesting. So I'll start with you.
Sure.
Tell me about your work specifically.
Sure. So my project is a documentary that encompasses interviews with college-age women from various diverse backgrounds, talking about their body image concerns and how to sort of combat them. So thus far, I've interviewed about 15 women. I'm also consulting professionals in the field of women's health, talking about ways that we can share our experiences and, you know, try to combat those issues. I've also been networking with students with whom I talk to at CGIU from the University of Miami, all the way to University of Toronto, all the way to students from Dubai, talking about ways they want to help. They want to film interviews for me with women from their schools. So it was a really neat opportunity to make connections that way, because this issue is global, as all of the CGIU issues are. So that's essentially what my project consists of.
What for you pushed you to think about body image?
So for me, I've been really trying to synthesize my college experiences into this sort of project. And as someone who has struggled with body image, eating disorders, all that sort of thing, I wanted to share my experiences and encourage other women to be open about those issues, because they are, you know, kind of taboo. They're not necessarily in the public eye so often, but that is changing.
I think we're seeing more of it,
definitely,
aren't we?
Definitely. And with all the initiatives, even that the Clintons introduced themselves concerning women and girls, it's going to, you know, increase even more.
Okay. And I'm curious to know, as you conduct this kind of work, given the global nature of the work,
sure,
are you finding, you mentioned it certainly is an issue no matter where you are,
right?
But are there differences in cultures, in that in the United States it's different compared to, you know, parts of Africa, parts of Europe, parts of Asia?
Yes. One thing I've noticed is the women with whom I've talked to who have moved to America from other countries like Haiti or Egypt, they hadn't necessarily experienced those body image issues as intensely as before they came to America. That's, you know, no issue with America itself. It's just with mainstream society. So what I'm trying to do is combat those issues on a global level.
What do you think is going to be the end result here? If you're successful with this, what are we going to see come out of this?
I think we're going to see a more openness in the realm of women and girls in terms of talking about these issues that, like I said before, have been relatively taboo in the past. I think that we're going to get closer to encouraging women and girls to love themselves. My project as a whole is called Schooling in Self-Love, Busting Body Image Issues. So I think if we can move towards that and not really discuss things on a statistical level so much, but really on an individual level, we're making the political personal. We're hearing individual stories, and but also seeing them on like a global level. So I think if we can do that, then I'll succeed.
And when you think about body image in American culture, and you look around sort of the media landscape, a lot of people will look at advertising and Hollywood, and sometimes it's kind of a cliche. In this case, I think there's probably a lot of culpability there. What do you look at as the cause of some of the anxiety that people have?
So a lot of it is to do with advertising. I watched a special by a filmmaker named Jean Kilbourne called Killing Us Softly, and she talked about that the root of body image issues is in advertising, but also I think social media can be a positive thing, but some of it is fueled by that. We've been seeing a lot of issues with bullying in terms of body image in the media recently. So I think if we can turn social media into a more positive realm for body image issues, encouraging women to love themselves at any size and that sort of thing, then we can succeed.
This is where I think that we will run into a challenge in that just take our country for an example.
Right.
If we're becoming more progressive and less obsessed with sort of unrealistic body image and the like, but then you've got the rise of social media, online communities where it's often anonymous, and we know when you are online and you can be anonymous, people can say terrible, terrible things.
Right.
And I don't know how you fix that sometimes.
I think the fact that my project encompasses so many different perspectives is going to potentially change people's minds. They'll recognize, this is something that America Ferrera said at one of the panels, that our projects are not soul-like works. Everything intersects. This is something I also talked about with Abigail Disney, that our projects are going to intersect and our perspectives are going to intersect. So I think if we get down to that really personal, individual level and recognize, oh, hey, I'm not alone in this issue, then we will respect each other just a little bit more.
Is there a problem with body image in cultures that are especially prone to inequality or misogyny?
That's actually something I'm discovering as I'm working on my senior thesis, which is about women's issues as well. So it's not that there is a bigger problem there. It's the fact that we're not talking about it, if there is one. So if we really get to the sharing aspect of that, then I think we can help.
Haley, I am really impressed. This is just one student, Adam. I mean, no pressure for the rest of you, but that's that's really great stuff. Where can we look for more of what you're doing in the future? I'd love to follow what you put together with this.
So definitely if you check me out on LinkedIn, it's just Haley Johnson. And then my Twitter that's affiliated with Nazareth College is Naz_Haley. I'll be posting updates periodically, fairly frequently as my project deadline comes closer. I will be releasing the trailer for the project fairly soon. And then the full documentary, I want to reach out to women's associations. I know the American Association for University Women is right down the street from Nazareth College. So I'm potentially looking to release the film there. I'm not sure just yet, but I'm really looking forward to connecting with people in the community in terms of getting more and more interviews because I want as many perspectives as possible.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Really, really great. Adam, this is a good example of exactly what CGI and what NAS are about here with this.
It absolutely is. And, you know, one of the things that people don't necessarily know is this is actually a competitive process. Students actually create an idea and then craft their commitment to action, and then they apply and they have to be accepted into the program. And so we have exceptional students with brilliant ideas, and they bring that to Nazareth College. We've set up a system of support through mentorships with faculty, staff members, community partners. Through their coursework, they can develop these skills even further. But then they apply and they get accepted, and it just gives them this opportunity for this, you know, world-class opportunity to meet with world leaders. So it's been quite an amazing part of our educational mission, as you can see, which is to not only educate people about what are the challenges that we're facing in this world, but to develop those skills, that knowledge, and the will to do something about it.
And part of what you have to watch going forward is the actual execution of some of these ideas, because this could be 1,000 students and the Clintons and a nice big photo op and everyone feels good about it, and then you go home and nothing happens. And it looks to me, at the very least, that this really is about function more than just sort of some of the glitz of a camera click.
The goal is that these students accomplish their projects, that they make the impact that they commit to. One of the ways that we support that is that we have set aside seed funding that the students have available to them. And so that's fantastic. And we also work with other community partners and are interested in hearing from people that would like to be mentors or that would like to group with them. We are tracking outcomes, and we'll continue to track outcomes. And we have set plans in place. Actually, all the students are required to put plans in place to assess their projects to make sure they're meeting their goals.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about CGIU. And you might have seen recent headlines about the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, in the news recently, because the New York Times, among others, are calling on the Clintons to stop taking foreign donations. They're concerned about appearance of impropriety if Hillary Clinton becomes president. And they raise a lot of money for this foundation. And this hour, we sort of have a unique opportunity to find out about just one of the many branches of the Clinton Foundation and what they actually do with some of the funding and some of the function of what they are trying to accomplish. So we're talking to students from Nazareth College who are among the 1,000 who attended CGIU in Miami March 6th through the 8th. And so a number of them are in studio with us right now. And so let me ask Silan Kim, tell me about your project.
Okay, so my commitment is about a smartphone application for youth mental health. Basically, it is for youth clients with high mental health risks, such as depression or suicide. It supports their treatment process, and it includes daily mood check or some therapy strategies or self-risk checks or emergency contact for some situation if they feel really unsafety. And this project is based on my social work internship at the Child and Youth Mental Health Center. So I think this app will help youth clients to be more connected with the therapy process.
Where did this idea for you come from?
Basically, my country, South Korea, has the highest rank of suicidal risk among OECD countries. So I was really interested in high-risk mental health. And after I arrived here about 2 years ago, I just found that in my internship, I met a lot of youth with depression and suicidal issue here too, but they meet the therapist only once a week or every other week because there are long wait list or time limitation.
Time limitations for therapies, you
said? Yes.
What kind of therapy? Just literally therapy sessions, meeting with people?
Yes.
Okay.
For cognitive counselings.
Mm-hmm.
And usually their parents communicate with therapists in emergency. So I saw some parents call and say, oh my gosh, my daughter cut herself again. What can I do for her? So I worried about them during the week after the session. So I just started to think about this idea, and I thought smartphone app will be a perfect tool for that population because most of youth clients always use their smartphone even during their sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this will be a good method for them.
So a smartphone app related to this?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And so how exactly would it work then?
So this is basically for the therapy process. So if they, for example, if they check their daily mood on depressed, then the therapist can use the database from their system during their face-to-face sessions. For example, if the therapist asks, how was your week? Usually youth clients just say nothing or good. So if we use this application and if the therapist use the data from app, we can ask them, okay, you checked your feeling on depressed last Wednesday, so what happened that day? And they will start their story with more specific way, so it'll be more helpful.
And again, you said that in your native South Korea,
yes,
suicide is the rate is high.
It's a huge problem.
Is it, you probably know much more about this than I do, but I assume depression and suicide go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Is it untreated depression? Are there other factors? Do you know why the rate is higher in South Korea?
I don't know how much you heard about our country's educational expectation.
Hmm.
We have really, really high expectation for higher education. So I think most of Korean people go to university after their high school. And a lot of parents have high expectation for their children.
A lot of pressure.
Yes, and for the Korean SAT, that is only once in their life. So they have high pressure for that. When I was a middle school and high school student, I stayed at the school until midnight or 10 p.m. at the library because it was mandatory. So it is changing.
You, when you were in middle school and high school?
Yeah.
So you were 11, 12, 13 years old?
Yeah.
And you were at school till 10 o'clock midnight?
Yes. So It is changing now, but still a big problem. So a lot of students choose to kill themselves because they cannot deal with that stress. It is so tragic.
You know, and what an interesting perspective, because it's so easy to sort of grow up here and understand, I say in the United States, understand what's happening here, get into the educational debate, which we had a conversation about last hour. But just to hear, it's just a very, very different setting.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will say, well, you produce very competitive students. You produce very high-achieving people. But it sounds to me like your perspective is there are very rough consequences.
Yeah, that is too tough. And I even recognize some cultural difference for suicidal method. because South Korea has a lot of apartment resident culture. Mm-hmm. So most of kids try to kill themselves by jumping from the apartment. Mm-hmm. But in United States, I didn't see a lot of apartment setting, but they have more house. So I found that more American youth try to cut themselves mm-hmm. rather than jumping in the building. So at least they have more opportunity to be found by their parents or friends before they actually died. So I thought about this application to provide more opportunity to them to recover. So
wow, amazing work. And so I don't know when you graduate. What do you want to do with a career, and where do you want to do it?
So my basic goal is to go PhD after my master's degree. I already have my master's degree in South Korea for social work, mm-hmm. but I learned total different things in here, a lot of for diversity issues. So I want to make more progress for diversity issues. For example, now I'm writing my graduation thesis about racial and ethnic disparities in mental health service in United States. And I think this research will be helpful for my country too, because although this South Korea is one nation country, it is getting changed and increasing population from international marriage and immigrants from other countries. So maybe my next step will be, of course, I will develop this application mm-hmm. for in reality. But after that, I will try to study more in child and youth mental health.
Wow. Congratulations on the work. Obviously, a very important arena. Daniel Mensing, you're a senior. You will be in the real world by May, so to speak. But tell us about the project that you've chosen. And again, having spent a couple of different sessions with CGIU now, what have you been working on?
Well, my project is called Social Change Through Intergenerational Dialogue, and it brings together all age groups to transform healthcare for older adults and empower people to move forward with the solutions they develop at intergenerational dialogue events, as well as reducing the negative aging stigma. So you were saying earlier that how do you know these 1,000-plus students move forward mm-hmm. sustainability? I'm an example of one of those students that took that idea and made it into an action plan and had it happen. And last fall, September, I had an event. 80 or more people from the community and Nazareth College attended, and it was in roundtable discussions, and we discussed different topics surrounding aging, from neglect to long-term care. And I had local leaders in elder care attend, Alzheimer's Association, Lifespan, New York AARP. You know, so you had the experts there and you had the community talking about these issues, sharing stories, and then moving forward to develop solutions that they can work together with their newly met connections and work in their community to better the aging.
And for 20 to 21-year-olds, mm-hmm. most of the time you think life is endless and we're all invincible. I've been there before. Mm-hmm. What made you think about aging for its subject?
Well, it started with my grandmother, who suffered a debilitating brain injury, slipping on ice when I was in mm-hmm. high school. And from there, my mother and I were taking care of her at home and within healthcare settings. And I saw that there were challenges older adults face within home and healthcare settings. And I saw that there is a real need for better services as we age in America.
What was the hardest part?
I'd have to say the neglect. Even though my mother was there all the time at the nursing home or at the hospital before, it's their home health aides are low staffed, and nursing homes can't recruit or retain the aides they need. And for the number of residents or patients that are in a nursing home, it's hard to take care of the patients, and I think that was the hardest part.
Sometimes we think about neglect and we think of something malicious, and you're saying mm-hmm. some of it is simply
it's very simple stuff. And also, I just think it can be as simple as not medicating them correctly or missing changing their diaper or not turning them, but that's because their hands are full with caring for other patients. and it's hard to keep up. But also, I think, you know, in American culture, we're very youth-oriented and a focus on independence, self-reliance, and individualism. And often we overlook our elders and how important they are to our society. And I think that the younger generations often fail to acknowledge the wisdom of our elders. And we need to step back and realize that we have a lot more in common than we think. And that was one of the topics I brought up at the conference I had in September. And I had an activity where it was bridging the stereotype. So I would ask a question or say a statement like, oh, they're always in shopping malls. And people would say, if it was a younger generation or the older generation, really, it's both. So we have a lot more in common than we think.
I think that's probably true for a lot of things. And so that was your conference on this that you did was last fall.
Yes.
And again, your project going forward?
Well, my project now is an expansion of social change through intergenerational dialogue. So my plan is to combine aspiring health professionals, so OT, speech, physical therapies, nursing, social work, special education, and all these majors for an interdisciplinary collaboration event. So not only will these majors come together and meet with the aging population in Rochester, but also the partner organizations that I had last in September and new partner organizations will come as vendors, so creating the opportunity for professionals and community members to learn directly about the perspectives and challenges faced by aging Americans and their families. It's just hard on caregivers.
Yeah, we certainly hear that quite often. Just yesterday on this program, we talked about the aging population and food insecurity. And one of the things we learned yesterday was that in this country, when we look at people who are technically hungry, who are food insecure, until 5 years ago, we didn't really know that the aging population was more at risk because when we did statistics and surveys, we looped them into a category just called family. You know, there was kids and there's family. Well, if you look at people 60 or 65 plus, all of a sudden we started to find these vulnerabilities. And one of the reasons, according to AARP, is that older Americans, particularly those who might be living alone now, felt there was a stigma in saying mm-hmm. all of a sudden they don't have money. They have to make a choice between medication and food, a choice between food and heating bills. And they didn't want to tell anybody, and they were embarrassed. But the more they realized that there's help, the more things can change. And you talked about the fact that you want to help alleviate stigma. Mm-hmm. Is that from your own experience as well?
I'd have to say I've run into a lot of people my age where, you know, older adults and the thought of planning for aging, even people in their 40s or 50s, they don't want to talk about planning for mm-hmm. the long-term care. They think that, you know, oh, I'll just die with a heart attack or my wife will kill me or something, you know?
I don't know about the last part. Maybe for me, but peacefully in your sleep. Sure,
right.
That's what we're all... That will
exactly.
be the case for all of us. Sure.
But, you know, it's not realistic, and we need to plan for our future, not just for ourselves, but for our families. You know, the plan for, you know, when I die, this is how... And it's conversations we don't want to have, but we need to have it, and we need to reduce the stigma we have on aging. I mean, there's so much more we can learn from older adults than we give credit. In Europe and Asia, you know, they're a little bit ahead of us Americans on that.
Talking to Nazareth students who attended the Clinton Global Initiatives University event in Miami, they're coming back to Rochester with projects that can be applied in our community and really around the world. And our producers and directors with City 12, and every Wednesday in the 1 p.m. hour, we're on City 12 television. And we're thrilled to be that if you're in the city of Rochester and you watch on Time Warner Cable, you can say hello to us. They're probably yelling at me to get to a break, and I'm way late. And John Andrus, the engineer, is nodding right along with me. I see you, John. So before I do that and we switch out some of the students, let me just very briefly ask the students, and I'll start with you, Danielle. About a week ago on this program, we talked about the possible end of democracy. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you about whether American democracy is doomed. But in terms of long-term health of our country, political scientists said one of the best things we could do is try to get back to a model of more public service. Mm-hmm. And that there seems to be a bit of a disconnect in younger generations. There's not a draft. People aren't serving overseas based on a draft situation. There are fewer sort of forced service projects. So I look at you guys and I think you guys are really connected to your communities. Do you think that students and people your age should be really seeking out more of these kind of projects more than just to benefit for academically or for a job or whatnot?
I think our generation is very involved in civic engagement. There's that other stigma that the millennials aren't actively involved in their community. And I think I disagree. We are very community oriented. This is a generation where we have the internet, we have social media, and we're talking about problems on a global scale. And I think that our generation is having these ideas and creating these ideas and moving forward to put those into action.
Well said. Haley?
I absolutely agree with that. I think that there is a stigma that millennials are apathetic or ignorant necessarily. And, you know, some of us are. But I don't think after having all of these conversations with really engaged millennials that the majority of us are. So I think that if we continue to go towards this movement of increasing public service, I think we'll succeed.
Ceylon?
I think young generation have diverse abilities and a lot of creative ideas, and they are safe for fail. And I remember a guest speaker at the CGIU, she said that use your status as a student because people are generous and supportive to the students and you have many opportunities. And I totally agree with these statements. So I think it is important to provide more opportunities to young generations to contribute to global issues and to develop their creative ideas.
Really, really well said. Let's take that short break, come back, and more with the students from Nazareth. And Adam Nalundowski is going to stick around. We're going to find out more about what they are coming back to Rochester with from CGIU. Stay with us. Welcome back to Connections. Adam, if you'd walked in with a script for your students, they probably couldn't have been making you look much better than they are so far.
I can assure you that I did not, that they are just this fantastic.
See, that's supposed to be what they all say, but they really are very impressive. We're talking to students from Nazareth College who are really civically engaged and thinking about ways to impact their communities, and want to bring in a couple of students now. They've kind of switched out on the microphones, and so now we've got a chance to meet Cheyenne Lewis. Hi, Cheyenne. How are you?
Hi, I'm happy to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you. Tell me about your project.
My project is called My Foot is Too Big for the Glass Slipper. It's actually going to financially empower Haitian women in my hometown to have a fair wage job so they don't have to wait to get married to get out of poverty.
All right, hold on a second. That's remarkable concept in and of itself, but you mentioned your hometown.
Yes.
Where are you from?
I'm from Okai in Haiti. I've been here for 7 years, and I'm planning to go back for the first time in May.
So your project, again, walk me through how it will work, Cheyenne.
Okay. In my hometown, a lot of young women like me doesn't have an opportunity to go to college, even after going through years of rigorous high school. Mm-hmm. So my project will teach women how to survive and be financially independent by learning how to make cultural jewelry, and I will connect them to online stores like Etsy and Amazon, and also places like Uncommon Goods and One World Trade Goods.
Why is it that young people where you're from can grow up even in a school setting but essentially get out of school and have very little opportunity? Is it just the fact that there's not a lot of jobs? There aren't, the economy is not doing very well, or is there something else?
In Haiti, they have a lot of poverty,
yeah.
But also they have a lot of rich people.
So there's also a huge disparity.
Yes.
From rich to poor. Yeah.
Yeah. So in order to get a job after high school, you have to have a lot of high connections. In order to have those connections, you have to be from a political family. And I actually came to United States for political asylum, and I never imagined that I will experience poverty. The first time I experienced poverty was actually living in Rochester,
wow,
believe it or not. So when I got to Nazareth, as a graduate student of the Rochester City School District, I was embarrassed that I did not have a mattress pad, but I was so proud of myself that I made it to college.
You should be proud. It's an amazing story. Now, you got here again 7 years ago?
Yes.
Did you come with anybody that you knew?
I also came with my family.
You came with your family?
My mother did not know any English. We all did not know any English. So we were navigating through the airport not knowing where to go. But now, after going to CGIU for the first time, going to Miami, and now I know how to go to the airport. I know how to navigate. I know what the right flight is. And I wouldn't even know how to get back home if it wasn't for this opportunity.
When will you be done with school at Nazareth?
I'm actually a first-year student,
mm-hmm,
so I plan to get a master's in business and hopefully have a higher education at a great graduate program.
Mm-hmm.
So in 3.5 years, hopefully.
What would you like to do?
This summer, I'm going to be training as a front-end manager for Wegmans Food Market.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope to get a corporate job after graduation, and hopefully have my own nonprofit or B corporation through my Clinton Global Commitment.
Cheyenne, if you break up and cry a little less, I will all cry with you. It's all right. It's an amazing story. And to me, Adam, hearing someone who grew up in those circumstances, seeing what you see around you, and then not living in poverty until you get to Rochester, is not what anyone would expect. But to me, that makes the possible success story all the more impressive. What do you think?
I think in many ways, experiencing everyone's narrative and actually not just thinking about what you think of this person, but talking to them, you mm-hmm. know, talking to your neighbor in Rochester, finding out where they come from and what their experience have been, is enriching. And it dispels a lot of either, you know, myths or rumors and how that may be. Cheyenne came to Nazareth College and she's a freshman. Right, and initially, with Clinton Global Initiative University, we thought these would be capstone projects, that people would culminate their 4 years of work, or the graduate students would come in with these projects. But here's someone who has this experience and has this idea, and now is taking it forward. You know, this will really define her educational experience. And she has, as I've told her, grabbed onto this with both hands, and she's not letting go.
Cheyenne, when you think about where you were growing up, then you think about moving to Rochester, then living in poverty, then coming to Nazareth. What was it like for you at CGIU, hanging out with 1,000 students from around the country, thinking about giving back to communities, meeting former president? What was that like for you?
As a graduate of City High, I wasn't even supposed to make it to a university like Nazareth, because we only have 40% graduates and only 10% go to college. So when I got to CGIU, I was even more determined to come back to NAS and use my resources and give back to the people that didn't get a chance to make it to college to experience things like CGIU.
Do you talk to any friends and say, we can do this?
Yes, I do. I'm actually partners. I work for Partners for Serving, where we go out to sites every Mondays and Tuesdays. And I'm actually planning to be a site coordinator so I could go back to my neighborhood so I could help other girls that did not graduate high school know how to find jobs even without a high school diploma.
Really amazing stuff from Cheyenne Lewis, a Nazareth student. I want to play a sound clip, if we could, from Hillary Clinton speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative that looks at sort of the nature of what Cheyenne is talking about, is looking at the ways to help women, young girls, and the Clinton Global Initiative has been focusing in some ways on sub-Saharan Africa, for example. So Hillary Clinton was asked to speak a little bit about what they want to accomplish and what's still on the list, and this is her speaking earlier this month in Miami.
There's also a lot of unfinished business. For example, we've gotten girls into primary school, but not into secondary school. We've gotten more women to contribute to the economic well-being of their families, but they're by no means where they should be in terms of economic participation or representation in leadership positions. And there is a still very serious problem about personal security, both in the home, in the community, on conflict zones, and so much else. So what we're trying to do, honestly, and we worked with a number of partners to take these million data points and digest them down so that we can have a very good foundation for figuring out what we do next.
All right. And so, Shaina, she's talking about sub-Saharan Africa, a little bit of a different situation. But my last question to you would be this. When you think about helping women, helping young girls in Haiti or wherever it is, how important is it that we look around the world and try to empower women more effectively?
It is very important as women that we don't base our looks and the amount of chance of future happiness. We actually think for ourselves. We actually go out and get opportunities for ourselves and create a better family cycle. It's very important that we do not wait for Prince Charming to rescue us out of poverty.
Absolutely.
So that's why my project is called My Foot is Too Big for the Glass Slipper.
So good. Paul, I'm sorry you had to follow her. That's all right. The next student, last student to talk to is Paul Lippert. And Paul, you are what year at Nazareth?
I am an academic junior at Nazareth.
All right, academic junior. What's your project?
My project is called Readbox Libraries. And what we do is we bring books into Rochester City schools, and we give them for the students to keep forever. Back to the idea of intersectionality that Haley had talked about. When you have students that live in high poverty, they often can't afford books. So we're giving them books that they get to keep for themselves so they can practice reading. The people that donate these books then become mentors to these kids, and that way they can pen pal with them and practice their writing as well as their reading, and they will have someone that they can connect with that is invested in their education.
What sparked this idea for you?
It's multifaceted. Adam went out on a limb my freshman year and hired me in the Partners for Learning program at Nazareth College. So since my freshman year, I have been working in the Rochester City School District, working with kindergartners. My mother is a social worker, teacher turned social worker. So I grew up kind of knowing about how, you know, civic engagement and social issues are connected with education.
You also probably know that people want to help. I think, again, blowing up stigmas, people, I don't think it's that people don't care about urban centers or the city or poverty, but often it's hard to find a way to do it that is sort of fits into someone's life. And I think mentoring is a great idea if you know how. So how would your project take someone like me? I'd love to help. I'm interested in what you're doing. How does it work? Walk me through the project.
Well, we would have to talk about the sociocultural issues that are in the Rochester City School District and how to best help kids based off of their sociocultural background.
Okay.
And then go from there.
And
I'd like you to donate books. That would be the first step.
Yeah, that's great. I've got books. My 3-year-old's got books. I've got books. We've got all kinds of books. But once you do that, again, some people will drop off a load of books and say, and which is great, by the way, and say, I've done something great today, but you can take it further, I think, is part of the point.
And that's, yes, that's a very big part of my project, is if we want our schools to improve, we have to make the school a center for civic engagement. We need to change the culture around schools in Rochester, make them a place where the community feels like they're a part of the school. The schools aren't going to get better if we just drop our kids off and then pick them up at the end of the day. We really need to be involved, and I think by adding the mentor component, we get the community caring about what's happening in schools.
What was your experience like in Miami?
I had a wonderful experience in Miami. I had the opportunity to meet with Reverend Jenny Norton, who's in charge of the Ramsey Social Justice Foundation, and I talked with her for about an hour. After our office hours, we both were lost on the University of Miami campus, and we were trying to find our way around and taking pictures of the beautiful campus that is the University of Miami. And we got talking, and she's now partnering with me in my project. So that was a really great experience. It was nice to meet so many people, get to learn about so many different projects, and meet with someone as awesome as Reverend Norton.
Well, I'm down to our last 90 seconds, so let me ask you what I asked the other students. Paul, when you think about service and the value, I'm glad that we've addressed the issue this hour, that we shouldn't be cynical about an entire generation. But for you, the value of a project like this, or the value of serving, whether you're 19 or 20 or 21 or 25, getting more involved in the community, what's the impact?
I think the impact is the satisfaction of knowing that you're making a difference in someone's life. And being, that's something that no one will ever be able to take away from you.
Which is sometimes, you know, good enough on itself. You mm-hmm. get that satisfaction, but mm-hmm. then you think about the way it's impacting other people. Congrats mm-hmm. on your project. It's going to be fun to follow. And the name of the project again?
Readbox Libraries. And you can like us on Facebook at Readbox Libraries of Rochester.
Readbox is one word?
Yes.
The Readbox Library Program on Facebook.
Yes.
Paul, thank you. Shaina, thank you.
Thank you.
Adam, some closing thoughts from you. What else do we look for going forward?
All right. Well, moving forward, we'd love to build connections, and these students are really hungry to meet with people and find out who else may be interested in their projects. So first, you can visit us at our website, the Nazareth College webpage, which is www.naz.edu. And if you search for CGIU 2015, or if you browse to the Center for Civic Engagement, we can give you more information on the program, and we can get you connected with the students that are here. We're passionate about this, and this is our second group of students. So we're going to start empowering other students to propose their own commitments to action for the fall deadline. And so our next steps will be, one, working with these students to bring their commitments to action to realization, and then two, trying to find that next social innovator on campus and empower them with this opportunity.
Great fun talking to you. Congratulations to you. I know you're even prouder 58 minutes later than you were 58 minutes ago, which probably didn't seem possible, but great group of students. Thanks. Nice to meet all of you. Thanks for being here. Good work and good luck going forward on that. And Adam, thank you for bringing them in and sharing the stories with us.
Happy to be here.
John Andrus, wonderful job engineering the program today, trying to keep me on the clock. You can keep trying, John. It may not work, but you can try. Appreciate you listening. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll talk to you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.